So we're now very happy to be joined today by Ethan Floyd. So Ethan is based on Gadigal land, and he was one of the participants of the Global Samud Flotilla. And so, yeah, many of our listeners probably have been following what's happening with the Global Samud Flotilla, which was very much a kind of a big act of solidarity, you know, from more than 50 countries attempting to kind of bring aid to Gaza, which is currently under occupation and denied any kind of, you know, basic goods by the Israel occupation forces. So good morning, Ethan.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So Ethan, can you give us a kind of a bit of an overview about, you know, how the flotilla kind of went. I'm aware that there were essentially two waves of participants. You were part of the first wave that I think got intercepted early and had to kind of return essentially back home. And then there was a second wave where many of the participants there got, you know, brutally mistreated, tortured, sexually assaulted by the IOF. And they have only just recently, those wave kind of participants only just recently returned at the start of this week. So yeah, if you can give me a bit of a kind of overview of the flotilla, that would be and also how many participants there were.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the flotilla, as you say, is an attempt in response to the call from Palestinians in Gaza to deliver aid to break Israel's illegal naval siege of Gaza and I think challenge the idea that Israel should be allowed to act with impunity against a state which they are occupying, that being Palestine. So look, this flotilla, you're right to say it was in two waves, but we were the same group of people. I've been back in Australia for about 3.5 weeks now. We were first setting sail from Sicily, and then as we sort of got a little bit across the Mediterranean towards Greece, we were intercepted by the Israeli Navy. So there were about 186 of us who were taken aboard an Israeli prison ship, and alongside myself, there were five other Australians, including Zach Schofield, Neva Connor and Bianca Webb-Pullman, as well as Surya McEwen, who was joining his fourth flotilla effort. We were held on board that prison ship for about 3 days before we were disembarked in Greece. From Greece, the flotilla set sail again, but there were some of us, including myself, who had been abused and who had been tortured by Israel to such an extent that we were sort of declared medically unfit to continue on the mission, and so I was sent home to Australia.
Hi, Ethan. It's Mary here. Can you talk more about the treatment of the flotilla participants and also what the response has been internationally about this illegal kidnapping of the flotilla ships and the people on them and the way they were treated by the Israeli so-called defence force?
Yeah, I mean, I can start by saying the international response has been disappointing. We've seen a few governments who have come out with milquetoast objectively, but in the relative scheme of things, quite good statements of condemnation of the treatment. And there I'm speaking about Spain and Brazil. You may have also seen some quotes from Meloni in Italy. But by and large, what the flotilla effort has, I think, continued to expose is the complicity of governments the world over. I mean, the Israelis and the Greeks made a deal in order to disembark us in Crete and allow for our deportation through Greece rather than through Israel. And sort of it's the same with countries along the Mediterranean who we were within their search and rescue zone. We put out Mayday calls, and those Mayday calls were not responded to. So I think the international response has been, telling of the global complicity in Israel's genocide. In terms of our treatment, for myself, I can speak to my experience that the violence was immediate. I was separated from my crew on board our sailboat when we were intercepted. And I was interrogated by three Israeli commandos for about 20 minutes. And any time I refused to answer a question or any time I answered a question in a way which they thought was, unsatisfactory, I'd be beaten, I'd be kicked in the ribs, I would be punched in the shoulders, in the upper arms, in the back. When we were taken off our sailboat and transferred to the prison ship, we were put in what's called a stress position. That is, you're made to kneel on the ground. Your hands should be behind your head and your fingers interlaced, and your forehead needs to be touching the ground at all times. And if you shift from that position, if you move or wriggle or adjust yourself, or worse, try to look up and see around you, you're kicked again, you're punched. There could be a boot in the small of your back forcing you back down. And in my case, and in many other cases, the muzzle of a rifle on the base of your skull that forced you back down into that stress position. From there, we were made to crawl along the side of the boat to a passport control station. Once I'd had my identity checked, I was forced up against the wall, and there was an Israeli flag hanging on the wall, and I had someone grab me by the back of my head, by my hair, and force my face into the Israeli flag, and I was instructed to kiss the flag. I was called a terrorist. I was humiliated and degraded and instructed to kiss the flag. When I refused, every time I refused, my head would be slammed into the side of the shipping container, and this happened 8 times, and that left me dazed and concussed and with head trauma, which has resulted in a tremor in my right hand that has been ongoing for the last month. So it was pretty brutal treatment, and your listeners will have seen just some of that treatment in the videos put out by Israel's National Security Minister, Ben Gavir. I can tell you that if this is the kind of treatment, if this is the kind of cruelty that Israel is willing to commit to film and share with the world, I would really like your listeners and everybody to reflect and imagine what they're doing to Palestinians when the cameras aren't rolling.
I mean, probably one thing I'll just add a bit of a quick comment before I go into the next question. I mean, and all the solidarity with you, Ethan, I mean, especially with what you've kind of gone through, I think it is just incredible, all the volunteers on the flotilla, the fact that they've been willing to go that far to put their bodies in line, risk, some of the worst kind of trauma and, even risk of death, really, because the first flotilla I'm aware of that happened early on, I think around 2006, Israel actually got away with killing more than, I think, how many was it? It was 6 to 7 activists who were part of the flotilla.
And people have gone on repeated trips. That's so amazing.
Yeah, and I think, it's the kind of solidarity, I think, that Palestine, the Palestine movement very much demands. And I think, all the gratitude to it. I guess I kind of sort of want to make one quick comment and then go into the sort of next kind of question, because this comment kind of relates, I think, to the next question. But, I mean, this whole thing about Ben Gavir, I mean, there's this whole propaganda point that's sort of coming from the establishment about this, that, Gavir is just, he just represents like... Gavir. Gavir is just one rotten apple within the Israeli kind of system, because, the Australian government has sanctioned him and another kind of far-right minister. He only just represents the sort of far-right of Israeli society and so on. And, Israeli political society is actually quite diverse. And I think, we have to kind of reject that, because at the end of the day, what he represents is actually what Israel is. It's fundamentally, I don't think there has been any real condemnation of how you and the other flotilla participants have been treated by Israel. And let's not just forget, at the end of the day, the entirety of the Israeli political society and all the politicians are complicit in the genocide that goes on against the Palestinians and the continued occupation and settler colonial project of Israel. So that goes into the kind of next kind of question, which is, can you comment a bit on some of your thoughts about the Albanese and Wong's response and the Australian federal government's response to flotilla? You can even comment on, how much the government actually assisted the Australian participants in the flotilla.
I should mention first the case you mentioned, the previous flotilla mission in 2011. That was the Mavi Marmara mission, in which there were 10 Turkish participants who were killed by Israel, just to make sure we got it. But with what you say about Itamar Ben Gavir, Israel's national security minister, there's been this sort of swift condemnation from Netanyahu and others, as well as elements of the pro-Israel lobby here in Australia, which say exactly what you've characterised, which is... that he's a bad apple, he doesn't reflect Israel's values, or isn't an accurate kind of characterization of how Israel approaches these kinds of solidarity missions. I think it's the opposite. I think that Ben Gavir is quintessentially Israeli. I think that he represents so accurately Israeli values. I mean, this is a person who spent most of his life as an extremist settler. This is a person for whom there are biographical accounts of, you know, him taking women on dates back to his apartment, and his walls are plastered with sort of shrine-like images and effigies of settler terrorists in Israel. So this is a person who I think embodies absolutely what Israel fundamentally is about, which is violence, which is occupation, which is dispossession, and which is a rabid grounding of all of those actions in racism. That's who Ben-Gvir is. And so I think it's important for all of us to not accept the response from our political leaders, which is to say, well, we've sanctioned this one individual, and you know, if we can just get rid of him, we can sort of reform Israel and you know, turn this rogue fascist state into something we can call a friend more proudly. I mean, you know, Ben-Gvir is the power broker for this coalition government that Netanyahu leads. The reason Netanyahu is in power is because others like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and the right-wing factions within the Likud are in this sort of, you know, dirty grand coalition with Netanyahu. So remove Ben-Gvir. It doesn't change the fact that this coalition government is propped up by others like Smotrich and other ministers who share this sort of rabid racist sort of terrorist ideology, which is Zionism, which is extremist, the ideology of extremist settlers. In terms of the response we've gotten from Albanese and Wong, it's been much of that in terms of how they've dealt with Israel and how they've dealt with the actions of Israeli ministers and Israeli soldiers. I mean, what we need to recognize is that it's not Ben-Gvir who constructed the prison ship we were held on. It's not Ben-Gvir who personally trained each of the soldiers who tortured and sexually assaulted Australians and 400 other international activists. And it's not Ben-Gvir who single-handedly sort of tills the ground and digs the shovel in every time a new settlement is established in the Golan Heights or across the West Bank. I mean, this is something that he is an expression of a very broad and very entrenched system in Israel. And so the thing that I want our political leaders to wake up to is that fact. And the sooner we can force that to happen, the sooner we can deal with the actual problem, which is how do we unpick systems which exist in Israel, but also crucially the systems which exist here in Australia in our own backyard, to prop up and support Israel's genocide.
Yes, absolutely. Any final comments? But I also wanted to ask, would you be prepared to go again on one of the flotilla?
Absolutely. In fact, I tried to, but I was you know, told it would be too dangerous. I was in too bad of a state. I was quite concussed with head trauma. And you know, when those other folks departed, I was here in Australia working as ground crew. I mean, Surya McEwen, who we mentioned earlier, this is his fourth attempt to break Israel's blockade. Mm. I mean, there is a criticism of the flotilla that it's a repeated action, that we should stop doing them because it's not working. What I would say to that is, if every social movement in history only ever tried every tactic once, we would never have seen the kinds of social changes that we've seen over the last 200 years. I mean, the way that we fight these battles is to evolve and to develop in our tactics, but also through this sense of persistence and challenging things again and again and again, not just as a one-off, because that's what we call performative activism. So that's my kind of response to that idea that's thrown out, that notion that's put to the flotilla. I think it's absolutely worth it. I think that those of us who have privilege in society, I mean, I look the way I do. I carry a Western passport. You know, I'm young. I don't have a mortgage. I don't have caring responsibilities. These are all privileges that exist within the scope of our society. And if you don't recognize your privilege and use those privileges, leverage them to do something which is good and right, I think that's a failing. And that's why in approaching this flotilla, the thing that I've been coming back to is this, that my conscience won't allow me to not do something, to not to sort of inadvertently quote Mario Savio, but to not to throw your bodies on the gears. And not to put yourself on the line for a cause that is good and right and is rooted in justice and equality. So, you know, we've said that this is the largest civilian humanitarian mission in history, and that's true. but there's an important qualifier that I have to place on that statement, and that qualifier is yet, that we have continued to see over the last 20 years these flotilla efforts grow and grow and grow. And Israel told on themselves this time. They told on themselves in their public statement. They said that they intercepted our flotilla so early, you know, 600 nautical miles, more than 1,000 kilometres from their shores. They intercepted us early to cut down the size of our fleet. That's what they said, to reduce the size of our fleet. Because I think that they know what we know, which is that if our fleet at its size, you know, more than 100 boats, more than 1,000 people, was allowed to pass unimpeded across the Mediterranean, I think Israel knew that we would break that siege. And we are currently in the best position we've ever been in. We have the best chance we've ever had to break this siege, to punch through that blockade, to deliver aid and show the world that it can be done. Show the world that we can actually stand up to Israel in a meaningful way, not through milquetoast political statements, not through diplomacy, but through actual, effective, direct action. So my call to all your listeners is, next time you hear the call out, if you've got a bit of fire in your belly, if you feel like you want to do something about what you've been seeing on your phone playing out for the last 3 years, call us, text us, get on a boat, sail the Med. We want to see you on the water.